Pearl by Mike Brotherton. The collector put his hand up to the tank's cold glass to convince himself it was real. The work was by far the best piece that the seller had shown him in the entire warehouse, the best he'd seen in years. The nude woman floated in the tank of blue water, 8 feet on a side, lit with floodlights from the bottom. Her hands were suspended by metal cuffs at the water line, her ankles similarly secured at the bottom, with her legs crossed. Strings of pearls hung down to form a curtain, separating the front and back halves of the tank. The woman's right breast and face jutted through the pearl curtain, and pearls were tangled between her legs. Bands of light shimmered over her skin. Her hair was long and dark, her makeup a permanent tattoo, her expression forlorn. Her toenails were painted pink. She did not smile. "This piece is exquisite," he said. "How much?" The seller rubbed his warty chin. "It's one of a kind, and people don't come cheap. Plus the eco-engineering alone set back the give me an opening price." The seller scratched his eyebrow, freeing a flake of dandruff. "I'd have to save $5 million. Hard to come by this quality." The collector had planned on spending only $3 million on this excursion. "Lower your price." "Look, I don't operate that way. Others will pay what I want. This is art." "This is illegal and..." The woman was looking at him. Her eyes were wide, her lips pressed in a tight, thin line. "I want it. I'll give you the $5 million. "$5 million? I was just free associating. I'd have to check my books for an accurate price." The collector grabbed the seller's shoulders, his long fingers digging in like talons. "I'll give you the $5 million. "Okay, okay, okay." After the collector let go, the seller massaged his shoulder. The collector looked back to his acquisition. The water must be cold. Her nipples were hard. The collector asked, "What's it titled?" "I don't know. I got it written down somewhere here." The seller checked his papers. "I have it in my office. I'll write up a sales check, too, and call the boys to pack it up." The seller walked through the dusty warehouse filled with crates and statues, stacks of paintings, dinosaur skeletons, to a bright room in back. He waddled, and his blue jeans didn't stay up very well. In contrast, the collector wore a gray, three-piece business suit tailored for his tall frame. He fancied himself intimidating. The collector turned his back to the tank. He smiled at the woman. She wriggled deliciously and shook her head from side to side. Her hair floated up in a brown halo, just the way a mermaid's hair might float in the sea. "Pearls! Its title is Pearls!" "Of course." The collector installed the tank in the living room of his winter home, a beach house on Florida's Gulf Coast. To either side of the tank, he displayed his favorite collections. On one side, an open black cabinet with shelves of hearts, 11 glass jars filled with formaldehyde and the hearts of executed murderers from the first years of the 20th century. The prize was the heart of the Czech anarchist, Leon Szilagyi, who assassinated William McKinley in 1901. The collector had picked it up cheap at the estate sale of an Arkansas doctor before the turn of the millennium. The heart looked like all the rest, faded, dead tissue, floating in fluid, but the collector knew its value. On the other side, another black cabinet, this one lit with red and purple lights, with shelves of penises, 7 plaster casts of the erect penises of 1960s rock stars, including Jimi Hendrix and Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger had an average-sized penis, but it looked good in purple. The collector praised the creativity of the groupies every time he passed the display. But he'd never had a piece like Pearl before. He'd mentally thrown away the name of the object of art, Pearls, and christened the woman herself as Pearl, forever trapped in the blue tank, forever wrapped in her curtain of pearls. Plastic tubes ran from the handcuffs into her wrists, feeding her, while tubes ran out the soles of her feet, carrying away wastes. Pearl never had to do anything but hang there and look pretty. Of course, it was better if she struggled a bit, on occasion, for effect. From the living room, the collector heard the doorbell ring. The collector checked the silver platters of hors d'oeuvres and glasses of champagne on the tables under the gulf overlooking windows. He heard his man, Martin, letting people into the house. The collector spent the first hour or so greeting people in the foyer, directing them back to the living room where they could drink and admire his newest piece. Things seemed to be going so well, he even let out the unicorns, a pair of goats genetically altered to have but a single horn each. He'd commissioned them and been quite specific about the physical features he wished them to have, but he'd neglected to be thorough. They tended to eat everything in sight, like curtains and rugs and furniture. After they'd ruined a medieval tapestry, unicorns stayed in their pen, except for parties. He hoped the guests would feed them little cheese sandwiches or something. When enough people had arrived, the collector moved from the foyer to the living room, smiling at everyone and shaking the right hands a second time. Vivaldi's The Four Seasons played softly, and jasmine-scented candles burned around the room. He joined the group admiring Pearl. It was a large group, nearly a dozen people. "She's got to be at least 38 inches at the bust," one woman said. "Only 36, actually. The way she's bound makes her throw her chest out," the collector said. "She's got a mole on the left one. You should have that removed," she said. "Have you climbed in there and porked her?" asked a man. "This is a work of art. One does not go around porking a work of art. How's she breathe? Why doesn't her skin prune up? And why have you got all the stupid pearls in the way?" Collector took a deep breath, held it, counted to five. With this sword, it was no great wonder he didn't have any close friends, although they were all potentially useful one way or another. Normal people were even worse. They had no taste and no usefulness. Normals had to obey the law. The collector dredged up the identity of the questioner from the from the place in his brain, analogous to the crack between the refrigerator and countertop where all sorts of bits of food fell to feed the roaches. "Well, Mr. Bristol, Pearl gets all the oxygen she needs from her feed tubes. There's a life support equipment under the tank. She could breathe air if removed from the tank, but in the water her lungs don't work." "I'd say they do. What a set of lungs." The collector continued. "Her skin does not prune up, as you put it, because of chemicals in the water that sink into her skin, preventing normal water absorption." "Why the pearls?" Bristol persisted. "Because they're pretty inexpensive." Laughter and nodding. Collector was ready for the party to be over already. His guests didn't get it. Lowest common denominator. He'd hoped they could at least appreciate Pearl, such a moving piece. But no. They were useful politically, financially, but nothing more. Gerhard in Geneva and Margot in Sri Lanka. They were the only ones he'd ever found in the world who truly understood. "Hey! We could put piranhas in the tank, or maybe some eels," another partygoer said. The collector temporarily abandoned Pearl to find Martin. He was in the kitchen pulling a pan of toasted ravioli from the oven. "Martin, the party is becoming quite a bore. Would you turn up the heat, put on some country western music, and light some guests go home incense?" "Sure thing, boss, right away." Within an hour, all the guests were gone. Martin was an efficient man, better than Rickles, who ran the New York estate. While Martin cleaned up, the collector regarded Pearl. "You're quite popular, Pearl dear, but they don't understand you the way I do." The collector pulled up a chair and watched her until the sun came up 5 hours later. The collector was tired, having failed to acquire the skull of German mass murderer Fritz Harman, sentenced to death by decapitation in 1924. Gerhardt made it clear he seriously wanted it, so the collector had backed out of the bidding. He expected Gerhardt to make it up to him. Gerhardt was keeping an eye out for a pre-20th century Bible bound in baby skin and written in baby blood. The collector cut his trip a day short and caught a flight from Frankfurt to Tampa. Slept most of the way, taking advantage of the first-class seats and a set of earplugs. As the plane neared the airport, he tried to call Martin to tell him he was coming home early, but the voicemail answered, and the collector didn't leave a message. He did not worry much. Martin was capable, and not always at the residence, but a good collector always worries some. He made it through customs without difficulty and picked up his DeLorean from the garage. He'd had to convert the car to electric if he wanted to keep using it, and he regretted the fact that he would not do that. He collected things for what they were. He did not change them into what they were not. The beach house looked inviting. The collector parked the car, disarmed the alarm, went inside, dropped his bags in the kitchen. He draped his jacket over a chair and went to check on Pearl. 3 months had passed since her acquisition, and she was still his favorite piece. The $5 million had been well spent. The collector froze. There was someone in the tank with Pearl. A naked man with dark hair, scuba gear and goggles, holding her from behind, fucking her. Martin. The collector started toward the tank, but stopped short when he realized that Pearl was smiling. Martin was still humping away. He hadn't noticed him yet. The collector withdrew to the kitchen and waited. When he heard the tank's lid shift and water sloshing, he re-entered the living room. Taking care of things, Martin? Boss! Pearl's head was turned. She was watching them. Martin held the hair tank in front of his groin, his goggles pushed down around his neck. Don't you know better than to touch my pieces? She seemed lonely. Don't you think the artist intended that? I bet you were more horny than she was lonely. I doubt, Martin! What if she gets pregnant? Did you think of that? Pearl was sterile, the collector was sure. Something had been done to keep her period from polluting the tank every month, but no need to let Martin off easy. I assume that... Don't assume anything about my possessions. Martin was dripping onto the beige carpet. He shifted from foot to foot, making a squelching sound. He kept his eyes down. I'm going to have to dismiss you. The collector tried hard to keep the anger from his voice. Yeah, boss. Behind Martin in Pearl's tank, the robot scrubbers floated out from their hidey holes and began cleaning. The collector went beyond furious. Pearl was dirty. A mint-condition piece, ruined. How long had this been going on? What else had Martin defiled? The collector made his voice even, reasonable. Finish out the week, and I'll give you a letter of reference. Fair enough? Yeah, boss. I'm real sorry. It's over. Let's just get on with it. My bags are in the kitchen. Take them upstairs and unpack them. Martin nodded and scurried by, or tried to. The collector stopped him with a hand on his shoulder. I'll take your tank. Martin hesitated a second, then handed it over. The collector lifted the air tank to his shoulder and heaved it at Martin's head. Martin ducked, but it clipped his temple. The metal cylinder hit the bottom of the cabinet of hearts and rolled into a corner. Martin fell to his hands and knees. Blood flowed from his forehead onto the carpet. The collector kicked at his ribs, but Martin was up again. They grappled, their hands on each other's throats, constricted, heavy breathing, stink of sweat, of the menacing chemicals and the chlorine of Pearl's water. Feet shifted. They careened into the hearts. The heavy jars slid on their shelves. The cabinet fell. The collector pushed away, but his leg got caught underneath. He felt the snap of bone. After a time, he realized that Martin was dead. The upper corner of the cabinet sat too low in his skull. Jars dribbled fluid, making this room smell of formaldehyde. Hearts lay like giant slugs on the carpet. His leg was stuck. It hurt quite a lot, he realized. The collector fished his phone from his shirt pocket. He knew the people to call who could help him with this. As he accessed the phone's directory, he looked at Pearl. If she'd been in air instead of water, her scream would have been much, much louder. Rickles, who'd flowed down to Florida the day of the accident, wheeled the collector into his living room in one of FDR's wheelchairs. The collector was glad he'd had a chance to finally use it. It was the evening on the day after the accident. Carpet was already free of stains and odors. The cabinet of hearts was gone. At least then the collector could make an inspection and assess the damage. In their place, he'd had the men move in the cabinet with his collection of mega superhero action figures in their original boxes, the ones with the cellophane windows. He had the rare Batman with a removable cowl. "Put me in the center of the room, facing Pearl." Rickles positioned the chair as directed. "What time is it?"
8:10, sir.
"Good. Leave me for a few hours." Rickles left him alone in the room with Pearl. The collector's leg throbbed distantly, pleasantly, keeping time. 5 minutes later, at precisely 4:15, Pearl began her exercises, or, more correctly, was exercised. Electricity ran through the grid implanted under her skin, stimulating different muscle groups for a few seconds at a time. She still looked like a mint piece. Collector smiled. Pearl smiled, too, when it came time to exercise her face. On a stormy night, 3 weeks later, when Rickles was out of town attending to the New York house, there was a knock at the door. The collector put a gun in his pocket and went to answer. Walking carefully with the aid of the silver-headed cane from the 1930s movie The Wolfman, he checked the peephole. Huddled in an umbrella was an old man with a broken vein nose poking out from under a pair of sunglasses. His dark suit was wet at the cuffs. The collector squinted until he was sure, then opened the door. "Gerhardt, come in and get out of the rain." "Thank you, thank you." Gerhardt stepped in the foyer, shook his umbrella, and folded it up. "Cheap Brazilian shit. One good sneeze would knock this thing apart." The collector took the umbrella, stashed it in a closet. "Let's go to the living room. Can I get you a drink?" "You wouldn't happen to have a Billy beer, would you?" "If I did, I would not give it to you." Gerhardt laughed. "I can only stay for an hour. I must drive. I'll pass on the drink." They walked slowly. "Why such a short stay? Why didn't you let me know you'd be visiting?" "Ah, but that would be telling. Suffice to say, I'm connecting to Central America, and I prefer you don't show up to bid against me." "But what happened to your leg?" They stopped in the doorway to the living room. "I had a problem with Martin." "Oh, not Martin." "Well," collector shrugged. Gerhardt reached into his jacket and pulled out a package wrapped in brown paper. "This is for you." Collector took the package and carefully unwrapped it. Inside was a brown leather Bible. "Wonderful. What do I owe you?" Gerhardt shook his head vigorously. "This is a gift. People like you and I do not need to worry about money, not with each other." "Thank you. Now, let me give you a gift. Come into the living room and let me show you the pearl of my collection." They walked into the living room and stood before Pearl. Gerhardt said, This is Wunderbar." "I knew you'd like it. Where can I get one?" "This piece is unique." "Not for long." "Then it will be the first." Gerhardt walked up to the tank and lifted a liver-spotted hand to trace Pearl's shape on the glass. "Who is she?"
"I don't know."
"You don't know?" "The anonymity appeals to me." With his hand still on the glass, Gerhardt half turned back to the collector. "But without knowing what she has lost, what she was, what she has thought, how can you know what she is?" "The piece should stand alone, on its own merits." Gerhardt shook his head. "I see you still have your rock and roll star penises. Why not just take plaster casts of your own, or mine for that matter, and display them?"
"Because they lack the history."
"Great art can stand alone, but you have a point. It could enhance Pearl's value to me, knowing." "Of course I am right. I'm older than you." The collector smiled. "Yes, you are, dear Gerhardt." They gossiped for the rest of the hour until the old man had to leave. The collector locked the door shut behind him and went back to the living room to regard Pearl. After several minutes of quiet contemplation, the collector decided to go to his office and consult the life support systems manual. The collector would take Pearl out and question her, just for an hour. Then he'd put her back in her tank of pearls. Forever.
She was heavier than he thought she'd be, but he managed to pull her unconscious body up over his shoulder. As the collector began to step down the ladder, Pearl made a gagging noise, and warm wetness soaked his back as she coughed great, wet, involuntary coughs, expelling the fluid from her lungs. He nearly stumbled then, but wrestled her down the last few steps with the coughs and the medicine-y smell from her dripping body. He dragged her to the recliner by the windows. He set her down, dried her with a towel, and wrapped the sheet around her. Her hands and feet were still bound by the metal cuffs. The collector hit the bottom of her wrist cuffs, injecting the revival drug. Pearl's eyes fluttered, opened, grew wide. She started to thrash. The collector grabbed her shoulders tightly, holding her down. She looked over his shoulder, saw the tank of blue water, became even more violent. "Easy, easy," he whispered. "It's all right. You're safe, safe." She began to calm and took a few deep breaths. She made a choking noise, gulped, threw her head back, gulped again. "It's air, just air. You're safe, dear, safe." The collector did not relax his grip. Pearl looked into the collector's eyes. She opened her mouth and hissed like an annoyed snake. "Say something." Pearl hissed from the back of her throat. Spittle flecked on his face. His grip tightened, and he shook her. She hissed mindlessly. "Say something." The collector pushed her down on the chair hard and stepped back. She couldn't talk, couldn't articulate a single coherent sound. She had to be brain damaged or some sort of moron. Having her in the tank was no better than having a dog or cat chained up there. The collector fumed, pacing back and forth across the carpet. Pearl hadn't been thinking anything human during her confinement. It lessened the peace. It had been so poignant before. Something hard hit the collector at the back of his neck. There was a crunch. He fell, landing with his face toward the tank. A moment later, Pearl fell in front of him, her shackled hands outstretched. There was blood on her cuffs. His own blood, he realized. The collector tried to get up. His arms wouldn't answer him. His legs wouldn't answer him. He watched Pearl struggle to her feet, fighting with the cuffs and the white sheet she was still tangled in. She made it finally and hopped toward her tank. His arms wouldn't answer him. She fell and crawled toward the tank like an inchworm. "Come back, Pearl." Pearl reached the stepladder, wormed her way up it. She slipped once and had to start over. She made it to the top, looked back at the collector, and tried to form a word. "B-b-b-" She fell, face first into the tank. The sheet trailed upwards above her. Then she bumped her head on the tank bottom. Her body and the sheet slowly drifted down, settled. Pearl made no effort to move. She just stared back through the glass, her head and neck against the bottom. "Get out! You can't breathe in there!" His voice was a whisper. Upside down, Pearl smiled at him as she drowned. The collector regretted not being able to use FDR's wheelchair, but he hoped in another decade or two medical technology would make enough progress to repair his spinal cord. In the meantime, he made do with one of Stephen Hawking's wheelchairs. The collector was watching the sunset on the deck outside his bedroom. Rickles appeared in the doorway. "It's nearly 8:15, sir." "Thank you." The collector shifted his head and moved the chair control with his tongue. With an electric hum, he rolled through the bedroom and into the living room, positioning the chair opposite the tank of blue water. Pearl's body hung limply, floating gently in the pearl curtain. Her cloudy brown eyes stared straight ahead at nothing. Her tattooed lips hung open in a lifeless pout. Even dead, she was still a fine piece. In some ways, she was better. Now they shared a history. She held a special significance in his life. "I was wrong about you," he said, as her muscles began to spasm with the applied current. "You were aware, but you hid deep under the water. You're still hiding in death now, but I know you're there." She was just dead tissue floating in fluid, but the collector knew her value. He waited for Pearl to smile.